And which was certainly I don't have the exact copy, but which had translated this. With some other factors here. That this can be expressed in terms of a scalar potential K, which is minus log of say S plus S bar and 3 log of T bar minus log of minus 5 times integral omega variation. And so if you ignore all these problems of decoupling of Kalman-Sapir modes, which I explained by which I discussed with today, then you can take this as a potential with the scalar, you can reduce, you can express this expression here as in the general, in the n equals 1 supergravity form with that scalar potential, which I showed can be obtained by reducing the classical 10-dimensional action looking at the kinetic terms. And this super potential. So the point was that, well, the important point to observe is that this is independent of the volume modulus T. Remember that real part of T was e to the 4u, and let me remind you what the metric that we had was. So this is the four-dimensional Einstein metric. So I remind you, I started with a 10-dimensional metric, which was in the Einstein frame. Otherwise, I would have had a e to the 5 by 2 factor here. And then I reduced, I took these answers here in order that you decouple, that you go to the four-dimensional Einstein frame. So this guy is a four-dimensional Einstein frame. And then there is this warp factor, which is depends on the internal coordinates of Calabial, and the G tilde Mn is supposed to be the metric on the Calabial. And so E to the U measures the radius of the Calabial, and I worked with, I'm at least assuming a compactification on the Calabial or Calabial orientable pole where H21 can be arbitrary, but H11 is equal to 1. I think it's possible to generalize this, but this is the simplest case. Furthermore, with this form of K and W, the potential was in this no-scale form, so you have dFW squared plus dZW squared, where these the Zs are the complex structure moduli, and the potential is minimized at dFW equals 0, dIW equals 0, and Zis are the complex structure moduli. So these equations determine the dielectron and the values of the complex structure moduli. However, the potential is, or the superpotential is independent of the scalar modulus, and dTW is So it, since it's independent of the Michaelis modulus, this is just dTk times W, which is W over T plus T bar up to some factor. So at these points, I argued yesterday that this is satisfied with ISD fluxes, namely G3 star, also I don't remember whether I is there or there, but so this means that that the G3 has some components in has a 2-1 component and a 0-3 component. So generically, this guy, so W is omega of h 0. So at the minimum of these two, the dTw is generically not 0. So since W0 is generically not 0, So these two conditions just mean that it has to be ISD, which means I can have this plus that. But if you want, in addition, a supersymmetric minimum, then W0 should be 0. That means that that it's only that means that this 0-3 component should be 0. For if you want a supersymmetric minimum. But generically, supersymmetry is broken. However, this is not a satisfactory solution to the moduli stabilization problem because the potential at this minimum, the potential is zero, so and P is undetermined. So that's essentially why it's called a no-scale potential. So P is undetermined. So we need some mechanism for stabilizing the Taylor modulus, otherwise, of course, we run into the old problem in Gram-Schmidt scalars. So how do we do that? So so this is where these authors here propose adding non-perturbative terms. So this can come from two sources. One would be some kind of string instanton. I haven't discussed these. This is some old proposal of Wertens from 95, 96. And the second is this mechanism that I discussed, namely Gugino condensation. So I discussed this in yesterday. In this particular context, the Gugino condensation, so you need to have some gauge group. And the gauge group they proposed, that you get a gauge group from some seven brains which are wrapping, so they wrap. This is the 3+1 dimensions, and then they wrap some 4-cycle in the Calabi-R. So that's some 4-cycles, and you have some stack of these 7 brains, and there is some Young-Mills theory on those 7 brains, and then you assume. And again, of course, this is stuff, which, I mean, you need to look at this in detail, whether this mechanism works or not, but and in particular, we need to make sure that the two fermion zero modes are, and so on. But let me just give the flavor of the argument. So, so you look at the, and so what you want to do is to find how a superpotential is generated from the Gegener condensation on the seven grains. And we argued in general how this can arise, and where we said we were discussing this a couple of days ago, that you get an unperturbative term of the form e to the minus f, some, well, pi squared over CA times f of phi, where f of phi came from this, from the gauge field kinetic term. So this was the, this is basically, f is basically the Young-Mills coupling. And so what we need to find out is, and in generically in the four-dimensional supergravity, this can be a function of moduli, which are neutral under the Gauge group. So what we want to find out is, what we want to get is some f which depends on t. Okay, so that would then give you some additional contribution to the superpotential, which depends on t, and therefore I can fix t modulus. So let's look at this seven grain action. So we just take a look at the DBI PCL. We don't need Myers here, but we just look at this square root piece, which is, so you have the, so this is wrapping some four cycles. So I want to get the S squared piece here. And so that looks like 2 pi to the 7 times alpha prime to the 4. And then from the square of that, we have the linear term vanishes. The square gives you the gauge field kinetic term. And now I just want to work out what I just need is how this thing transforms. Into my four-dimensional Einstein metric. Okay, and so I look at that metric there, and just rewrite these in terms of those. In terms of this, of the Gtilde metric, you have the following. So up to some, well, there's some factor of alpha pi squared here, which I really don't, well, some factors of 2 pi here. And then you have, so you have the 4y integral with this root Gtilde. So this is coming from wrapping the full cycle, so you have some factors. So from the root g, so there are some factors of u coming from each of these. So coming from the four-dimensional root g, I have e to the minus 12 u plus 12 omega plus 4 omega. I'm sorry, I changed my notation. Let me string. I had called this omega right through. So let me keep that notation. And then I have from the full cycle plus 4u minus 4 omega. Okay, look there. So that's coming from here. And then I have e to the plus 12u minus 4 omega. And you can, so remember this was written in the Einstein frame, and you can convince yourself that, so if I had written this in the Einstein frame, I would have had a factor e to the, say, minus 5 by 2 or 4, plus 5 by 2. Say the factor e to the plus 5 by 2, multiplying this, if I had started out in the string frame. Okay, which is what I did, which is what I did here when I wrote down this this action. Okay, so I have all these vectors. Let's see. Okay, so this one is coming from the inverse metric. It's from the G mu nu G lambda sigma piece here. Okay. I'm looking at the four-dimensional. Piece of this, the four-dimensional action, okay, four-dimensional gauge field action. And I claim these are all the factors that I get, and the dilatron cancels against that, the dilatron dependence, so there is no dilatron dependence here. So this then becomes, integral over this four cycle, C4, let's say, of beta e to the minus 4 omega of root g tilde d4y times some factors of 2 pi to the 5 alpha prime squared. And then I have a quarter times integral d4x times root g tilde 4 times a g inverse. Times e to the 4u of x times f squared, f mu nu squared. Okay? That shows me that my f function, that shows me that the function f of y is just some number, this integral here, well, you can normalize this to 1 if you like, but it's a constant. So the important point is that f of phi, or the real part of f, is e to the 4u, which is t. Okay, that's the real part of t. So f of phi is some constant times t. Okay. So this implies that my W non-perturbative potential is some constant here times e to the minus a p. And the corresponding situation in the hydraulic springs. In fact, this is what people have been discussing from the mid ages. This is a function of S. The gauge, the classical piece in the gauge coupling function is S, the dilatron. And non-perturbative piece would be some e to the minus a S.
In principle, there are fluxes, so in principle, there would have been a B field. Is that not going to do anything interesting to this conclusion, or?
A B field? You mean the NSNS?
Yeah.
The B field. Now, so in the hadronic case, of course, the B field comes in as the axion of S. So S was the e to the minus pi, I think, plus some axion, which is coming from the four-dimensional B field.
Right. No,
but
I mean,
is that what you?
No, I mean, you have here this ornithal action, and so
yeah,
there's principle.
You mean this guy here?
So
yeah.
So I don't know. You know, there are fluxes on the internal space. So in principle, this.
Yeah. Well, but that wouldn't affect. Well, all I'm doing is, okay, identifying the four-dimensional gauge field action, right? So so of course there will be some. So in the when these are the little mn's, there will be some piece bmn and piece here.
Yeah, I'm more thinking that square root of g tilde 4 would have been a square root of g tilde 4 minus b on the internal cycle.
On the internal cycle, yeah.
And so so I skipped a bunch of steps, but I don't know that doesn't change sort of the powers or, you know, fact, you know, all these exponential factors. I don't know how they plug into them.
So the logic is to, you mean this exponential factor?
Oh. Well, I can imagine that I'm saying there's a whole new bunch of terms, and so it could be that it doesn't factor out so simply. It could be that there's a more complicated expression.
I don't think there would be any additional contribution to the F squared. I mean, there are of course additional terms in the expansion, but involving the B field. But I don't think.
No, that.
Would they contribute? I mean, I don't see how they would contribute to F mu nu square. Would they contribute to F mu nu square?
I don't see why not.
Well, we can maybe go through it later. But I didn't think that get a contribution from the B field, but. Well, the B mean nu would be is projected out in this case, right? I mean, BMN is what you're worried about.
It would be in the measure that you're integrating over the four cycle. It would be
in the measure. Yeah.
Well, I'm not sure that it's all factored out.
So that could be factors here, which is there, which I'm all, I mean, I'm hiding everything in that A, that constant. Is that?
It could be that simple, but it could also be that, you know, the e to the 4u started its life, you know, hiding in measure factors as well as metrics and whatnot. And so it could be that it doesn't factor as simply as
I don't know. I didn't. I mean, I was just trying to reproduce, and they don't go through this in the paper. I just tried to reproduce and this is what I came up with. So, but I mean, they in fact give a dilatron factor also, but that's it.
Good.
What is it? Yes. Well, there are NSNS fluxes which survive, so the B mu nu is projected out, I think.
Right.
B mu nu is projected out, but not the.
Well, it's not projected out because you put it on cycles that are also odd.
On the internal space, it's fine. The 4D space, B mu nu is projected out. The B mu nu is projected out.
Do we know the action of those 7 grams in the presence of redox fluxes?
I will probably get back to this, but I don't know.
Well, I would have said, I would have just used the usual board info term there.
T is the volume modulus, right?
T is the volume modulus, yeah.
So all the dependence on T is just given by the null scale factor. So probably B mu nu scales the same way as G mu nu. And even if you modify, if you insert the B mu nu there, it won't change the scaling on the overall volume. So that so the dependence on T doesn't change. Mm-hmm. Like I said, the A probably does have.
Yeah, but A might, yeah.
But just the T dependence is overall.
So that's one possibility. So if you want to argue that way, that would be a simple conclusion then, that you're just modifying A, the whole right. A up there. But
what you're worried about is that this structure here would be changed. That
yeah, it might be.
That it may be some other power of U, or it may not be there at all.
Yeah,
it might be
a simple power. It might be some function.
Complicated function of T.
It might also depend, I don't know, on moduli of the fourth cycle or something.
Uh-huh.
But it could be that,
I don't know. I thought that, all of the complications just factor out like this, but maybe. So now the correct thing to do, of course, would be to add this piece to your original superpotential that G went to omega. But that's not what you do in KKLT. They assume that you can first stabilize the S and Z moduli. In other words, solve these guys. Oh, that's going beyond my reach. So assume that before adding stabilize S and ZI by solving dS W equals dI W equals 0 with W being W caps. W flux is the original flux superpotential G with omega over there. So once you solve this, so W flux gets replaced by a constant, which is a constant generically non-zero. Okay? And then what they say is W is W zero minus the plus A e to the minus A t. So this is the new total superpotential. Constant plus T dependent. I'll discuss whether this is justified or not later on. But for the moment, so this is our assumption, that I can write W in this way. So now I just have a superpotential for T, and if S and Z are constants, then up to a constant, up to some additive constant, the Kähler potential is just a minus 3 log T plus T bar plus a constant, so I didn't know the constant, so up to some normalization of the potential, that's the Kähler potential and the W that we deal with. And in this case, I get some supergravity potential which is A e to the minus A tr over 2 tr squared, tr means real part of t, plus this constant W0 plus 1/3 tr times A e to the minus A tr plus A e to the minus A tr. So I've set Ti equal to the imaginary part of T to be zero when in writing down this potential. So this potential just has one critical point. I mean, you can keep the imaginary part and look at it in complete generality if you want, but it has only one critical point, and it's a supersymmetric critical point. DTW is 3 TR squared. That's sorry, 3 over TR. 2 TR. Times the constant W0 plus 1 plus 2/3 TR times A. Times A e to the minus A tr. And that's the only critical point of potential. And so now, of course, we no longer have the no-scale structure. The no-scale structure dependent on having a W which was independent of T. So the potential is T squared minus 3W squared is e to the k dt squared minus 3W squared, which at the critical point becomes just minus 3 e to the k 0 w squared 0 at the minimum, I should say. In other words, you have an ADS minimum. So you have a potential which looks like this. Asymptotically it goes to 0. So that's so all string theory potentials. Yeah, you can see from the form that as t goes to infinity, this goes to 0, that's decompactification. But you do have a minimum, and so you stabilize the t modulus. So you have an ADS. So this is a supersymmetric minimum. Okay, so now of course for consistency for this we started with this is an analysis done within the context of large volume compactification. We started with some 10 dimensional theory, ignoring all the string states. And for self consistency, we should produce a minimum at T, which is large, compared to the size of the internal volume should be large compared to the string scale. And also, this number derivative term, you might expect, is some leading term in some instantons. So AT should also be large in order to make, in order to justify the fact that you keep, in some sense, just get some leading term in a series of number derivative terms. For self consistency, we should have T large and AT large. So So if you look at dT dW equal to 0, so this we are setting to 0. So this is compatible with those conditions only if W0 is pretty small. Okay, so need W0, which is, remember, this is just the value of G3 with omega at the minimum, well, it's at the minimum of the of original flux potential, but nevertheless, but you want this guy in the scheme to be smaller than 1. And now they argue that, well, generically this is order 1, of course, but if you have on the order of, well, say 100 cycles, there is a typical Calabi-Yau, then perhaps you can 3 cycles. If H21 is large, of the order of 100, then so this would be some sum. I mean, if I re-express this as integrals over the cycles, then it's some sum of integers, positive and negative, and you might expect, if you have large enough number of cycles, that these cancellations will produce something which is small. So there would be some non-generic situation where a set of fluxes where you can produce this. So that's the consistency argument. Okay. Any questions about that? So now let's. So we stabilize the modulus, but they are not satisfied because this is this is a supersymmetric ADS minimum. Now, of course, you may be able to tune this to be small ADS, and I don't think, well, for instance, you could have a sum of such terms also. You can, I confine myself to one gate group which can exist. You may have, like in racetrack models, you may have more than one gate group which condenses, and then you can produce perhaps even fine-tune this such that this is small. After all that you need from a classical potential is a minimum which is not too far from, which is of the order of, dV scale, positive or negative, because the cosmology of constant that is measured at a large scale, so you need to integrate out all the standard model effects and so on, and which will give you a contribution to this classical potential. So it's really, I personally don't see any particular reason to demand from the classical potential produced by string theory at the, say, somewhat below the, at a scale somewhat below the string scale or the Kaluza-Klein scale, that you need to demand that potential minimum should be 10^-3 eV scale. However, with a positive value. However, this is what they want to do. So they want to lift this minimum to something which looks like this, where this is small and positive. So you want to go to some dS minimum. So what they say is, well, there is some, so the typical situation that they are looking at would be some kind of, you are looking at some warped road, so you have these fluxes which, and D3 brains which can create some throats, and then to this situation, which, I mean, so up to now we have had oriented fold planes and D3 and D7 brains and fluxes, And they all preserve some n equals 1 supersymmetry in figure of 4 dimensions. But to this, they now add some D3 bar brain, which according to some argument, earlier argument of I think Pearson, Rabindranath and Kashyap, will move towards the end of this throat where the warp factor is minimized. The D3 brain throat will tension will depend on the warp factor, and you argue that it likes to minimize this tension and therefore likes to minimize the warp factor. So they say let's add a D3 bar brain. So this gives if I look, for instance, at the tension here, this is the D bar. If I look at the action for this as of a D3 bar, then so this has some term like this, G4. So this is wrapped in the 4 dimensions, 4 spatial dimensions. And then if you look at these various factors using, it's hiding under that, but I have that metric. So if you use the metric answers, then this will give you some terms like, you have the warp factor, omega of y, and then you have the e to the minus 12, then you have a factor e to the minus 12 u, just work this out. And then you have the detail there. Okay, so now e to the 4u was t, or the real part of t, so this is 1 over t cubed. So they argue that there is an additional contribution to the potential from the d3 bars, which looks like some constant, which depends on this warp factor, and it tries to minimize this tension, so it goes way down this throat. You have some contribution which looks like this. Okay. Now they say the total potential should be So the total potential should be this supergravity potential, which we had, that guy there, plus this piece here, delta V, which is V over KIK. Okay, and with this contribution, so this is some positive contribution. This is essentially the tension of this D3 bar, that just lifts this ADS minimum to some DS minimum. Of course, you have to tune. These things have to be adjusted. If this is too big, you will lose this minimum. You will generate what you would get. You will do something which runs away. Okay. Remember, that term runs away. That term runs away too. Okay. So you have two terms which are running away to infinity, and so you have to balance the two in order to achieve some minimum. Okay. But within the spirit of fine tuning. Justified partly by the fact that we exist according to the anthropic ideology. What?
We're debating existence.
That's okay. So that's our potential. Well. Okay, well, well, I have various issues with this, but I don't know, maybe other people have too, but if people, I mean, I don't know, if anybody wants to comment on this so far.
One question, is there a point in which you want the flux to be relatively large or at this point?
Well, okay, so if you want warping, if you want significant warping, right, then, well, okay, this is stuff I didn't mention, that you have, you need to get it through, so you need to z min looks like, I think the relation is something like this. Omega min is like some ratio of fluxes, some, you know, minus k over m. I think I have written down something else there.
Yes, right.
So there has to be some large ratio of fluxes. Yes. If you want
Yes,
there is some factor of 1 over G spring. Yeah, well, that's still, well, you would want G string is also determined by fluxes.
Right, but if I said I wanted to live in a world where G string is small,
then yeah,
you have to tune the fluxes.
Then you have to tune
the fluxes. Well, I had to do some tuning over here, but I'm not doing any extra tuning to get this.
No. Infinite to relative G string is quite small.
Right. But you
have to do G string is small, you have to take last fluxes.
Right.
So
okay.
If you identify G spring with the physical coupling at the unification scale, it's not that small, it's about half. G squared over 4 pi is 1 over 25, which means G is about a half. G squared is about a half. G squared is half. 4 pi is 12. Okay, anyway.
I'm asking because somewhere along the line, for example, in the DBI action, it assumes that you know all those objects, and those are only known for small fluxes, or for zero fluxes.
They're known for fluxes with a gradient.
Yeah.
The gradient of the field is
gradient of the flux is small.
No, I mean, in the DBI action, you have F plus T. So the gradient of F or the gradient of T is too small.
Yeah. Yes.
So that means that H is too small.
Well, it's the combination which needs to be small, right? But you can probably have both large. Well,
no, they're very
well. Yeah. The rest of gradient of B has to be small. Yeah, maybe so. Yeah. I mean, look, there are all kinds of problems of consistency. Right.
Yeah, another point is, though, that K is a flux quantum, which is an integral of some flux or some cycle. This doesn't necessarily mean that if the cycle was large, the sort of the field strength on that cycle doesn't have to be that large.
Also, this is just one flux. So you might say, okay, this flux is large for the one that we have a constant of 7 grain is fine.
But there are, I guess there are all sorts of issues like that.
Yeah.
So what are your issues? Your top 10?
Top 10. Okay, well, the J1. <Got
that. laughs>
Are you supposed to do the countdown back?
Yes, we're doing the countdown back. I don't have that. But if you add all these others, we might get that. So D-brains, right, to the explicit brain. At the string theory level.
There are some certain this is spontaneous working.
Well, there are some statements, yes. I don't know.
Come to lower by now, this is a spontaneous reference for the scene. Almost everybody is forcing it to the stage of war, even though I don't think it's.
No, I'm not sure. So spontaneous breaking means it is a detail. Right? This is what Shamit was arguing. It was, okay? But of course, as I showed, last lecture or the previous lecture, if you start from ADS minimum, which is supersymmetric, the D term is not going to lift it. Because if the D term, if the F term vanishes, the D term vanishes. Okay. So D term, well, this is still, if you find the ADS non-supersymmetric minimum, which is easy to do also. You can find such minimum. In fact, in the paper of Ramya, I'm sure we did have such minima, then those can be lifted if you want. It turns out that if you stick to this philosophy here of adding a constant plus a non-perturbative term, then you might ask whether I can add many such non-perturbative terms. If I have several gauge loops which condense, okay, then I would have several terms there. And then the question is you might expect I have more than just this supersymmetric critical minimum, right? Critical points. So it turns out that even however many terms you add, you can never produce a De Sitter minimum. Supersymmetric breaking Minkowski minimum. But that's within that simple context where I don't change the Taylor potential and so on. So my main beef
is stable.
Stable, of course. I mean, you can produce other parts.
Right.
Yeah. You can produce other parts. So that is the problem with D terms, but I'll discuss that a little more. So the alternative. Racetrack scenario. Well, it doesn't work within the simple context unless you have. On the other hand, if you had two Kähler moduli, it's possible to make this work. Can work if I have with two. Like Kähler moduli, or say the light dilaton and one Kähler moduli or whatever. Okay, so in other words, if you don't integrate out right at the beginning all the other moduli, and let's say that there is one which remains, and then obviously I have a complicated Taylor potential and also allow myself the possibility of having a racetrack, then it's possible. For then the problem of course of well K KKLT computed Carnoulli probabilities from here, and this tunneling takes place through for Hawking Moss instrument, where this is sitting on top. But there is also the problem of whether this old overshoot problem of Brustein and Steinheim could be solved, because you expect generically the system to start at some high point here, and then you might expect it to roll down this minima, and this maximum here is tiny compared to the scale of the potential, compared to say, the string scale typically. And so this can be dealt with, we argued in a paper with Rami and with a student of mine, Martins, for Martins, that if you have some primordial temperature, then it's possible to stabilize this minimum. So this is the overshoot question. So this can perhaps be solved. But my main beef with this is whether this procedure is justified. Is the procedure of integrating out S and VI with W and P0 and then adding W and P justified. And I claim, I can make it.
I mean, your sorry. Problem is with the W and P. The procedure before that is.
What?
The problem is the procedure before W yes. and P or after you add W?
I'm saying that you have to look at the full potential in the presence of the number derivative terms. And you get a much more complicated potential there.
But before you add the W and P, no
problem. Yeah, no, I have no problem. Well, okay, okay, that is also the problem of getting this potential, whether you can consistently decouple Kalutta Klein modes.
But that's the same as in type 2A case is much cleaner, there you can clearly decouple. There you can try to build a gap. Integrate out stuff about the gas. Right, I mean, because then you really get as loud as you want, ABS times the loud.
In the type 2A case, you say that who has done that? I don't know. You mean this one with DeWolf and Taylor? But there, I don't think they actually. It's a question of whether there is a consistent truncation.
Right.
And
you can show that you can compute the mass of the massless mode and the Kaluza Klein mode, and they scale differently with the total flux, and which you can take to be arbitrary. That was my impression. I haven't.
I don't know. I haven't looked at that paper closely, but at least in the case that I have looked at in the Tech 2B case, I think they are unresolved problems.
Can we go back for a second?
Yeah, sure.
Vote on 5 was at the end of the day it is okay, or it is not. I didn't quite catch it. On number 5.
Number 5 is, I claim that if you keep all the moduli and write down the full potential, you get a much more complicated before you add any.
Okay.
Don't play around with the debug, right? Okay. So So the claim is which, I mean, yeah, I wasn't planning to go through that in detail, but the claim is that it's in my notes, but. One should really work with where's the W? So this is your W, right? This is G3 raised omega plus what do they call it? A e to the minus j t. And k, which is minus log s plus s bar, minus 3 log t plus t bar, minus log of omega raised to omega bar. Okay? This is my potential, and now I should look for extrema of this, of minima of this. Of course, it's very hard. And I looked at some simple cases, and you can see that things that there are terms which are of the same magnitude. So try to do this with just keeping S. Supposing I have a rigid collabia, right? So no Z's, no complex fraction moduli. So I have S and P, and then. Try to integrate out, so then write down the potential and try to integrate out the S. So now the problem is that this is not, this is, so how do you integrate out? I mean, so I have some discussion of what you should do when you integrate out in the supersymmetric series, but roughly speaking, I mean, at least as far as computing the scalar potential goes, it's okay to set this to zero. I mean, this is the analog of the usual in ordinary supersymmetry, in global supersymmetry, you would set that to zero, right? To integrate out some field. So here you set this to zero, but now, of course, this tells me that S is going to be some function of T, but it's actually going to be a non holomorphic function because this is a non holomorphic equation. And if you solve this, you get T and T bar. That's okay, you can still compute a potential. I mean, you just need to use G, okay? And G is not holomorphic. So use this, which is K plus W squared. You compute this potential, and you find that there are terms. You get terms like this, but there are additional terms which are of the same magnitude, which you're ignoring, okay? So one of the points I was trying to make is perhaps, I mean, I didn't do a complete analysis, but my student has looked at some examples and he was able to produce within the context of having more of some racetrack type situation, I think, where you have more than one exponential, but you are able to produce some positive minima. But I mean, this is not by any means a realistic example, and it is, of course, only a local minimum. But it may be the case that they don't need to add this uplifting term if you really analyze the potential properly. So I don't know. I mean, that's a possibility which perhaps now we. Examine.
Aren't there also things that grant it higher derivative corrections?
Oh, yeah, okay, yeah, right. So there are claims, but they don't. So there are these calculations of corrections, alpha prime corrections. So you get some. Yeah, so you get some corrections to this. So you can compute these alpha prime corrections in some large volume situation, and you get some additional pieces there. And let's see. I think, so this paper of Berglund, Balasubramaniam, Quevedo, and content, I think, content and Kevin, yeah. So I think what, yeah, if I remember right, what they're arguing is that you can avoid this fine tuning of W0, and you can get you know, a reasonable minimum without fine tuning W0 because of this additional test, alpha prime test. So that's what they argued there. With this guy, I mean, I don't know. I mean, the problem here is that it's not clear to me how to justify this four-dimensional supergravity. I mean, the construction. I mean, this is what we have been relying on all this time. We argued that well, modulo these issues about pulse decline and so on, that their potential can be expressed in the supergravity form. But once you have some explicit breaking already at the string scale, at the original string level, I mean, you're adding this debug brain, so it's not clear to me that you can, you know, rely on a structure like that you can actually write something like this down. If you added this at, do you want me to say something about, I don't know, I can either stop now, or do you want me to say something about the KKL and MMT?
Sure, I'd like to hear about it.
Okay. What? What?
Don't you want to justify the title of your talk?
Here was the title.
So I want to justify.
Okay, so let's see. So within this context, so they are working in this. So this is a paper of Patrick Kalash, Linda. Maldesena, McAllister, yes, and Rivet. So they address this issue of whether you can get inflation from moving brains from a D bar brain, from a D brain moving towards a D bar brain. So obviously, it's in this situation here of KKFP, which, of course, I don't like in the beginning. Let's see what they say. So this scenario was proposed, I think, a long time ago several years ago by Tai and Adwali and Tai. So the argument was that. You have such a potential. So if I have let's say a D bar brain, let's take this to be both three brains. You have some potential distance R. You have some potential here, which is 2g3 times 1 minus something. Some factors of 2 pi and so on. But essentially, it depends on some numbers here, R to the 4. So if you look at the epsilon, so you want to argue that you can get inflation from these brains coming to from the motion of these brains. And the question is whether this motion is low enough to justify, whether this potential is low roll to get enough inflation, so on. So they argued that, so if you compute epsilon and, if you compute eta here, eta is the foreground here, which is m Planck squared times v double prime over v, then you find that this eta, this r is not the canonically normalized field, so you have to, you have to go to the canon, this formula is written in the canonically, for the canonically normalized field. So if you work this out, this is of order one, it's a negative term, order one, and this is of the order L over R to the 6, okay? Where L is the size of the compactification manifold, okay? L is size 6 manifold. So to satisfy this low roll condition, because you need to have this to be much smaller than one. But this is impossible because so this requires R greater than L. So you want a throat which is larger than the compactification manifold, which also cannot be the case. So then you can do various gymnastics within this context try to argue that there are some this is a very general argument, but I can think of more complicated situations where this might become possible. However, I think the killer is the stabilization of the moduli. I mean, so the main claim of the paper is that if you work within the context of stabilized p-moduli, stabilized k-moduli, so that the size of the manifold is fixed by the fluxes and the number of terms, as in p-k-t, then eta is generically of the order of is two-thirds plus small corrections. So, how did they get that? Well, they get that by looking at expert on this is, by the way, Alex, who's actually written a nice paper on this, where he looks at this from the 10-dimensional point of view, and he gets a much nicer derivation of the same result. Maybe you could ask him to give one of the Friday talks. Because he has been looking at for some reason which I don't understand, Henry doesn't seem to accept this, and he's written a recent paper where he claims he can fine-tuning get enough inflation, but I'm not quite sure whether he does it. And Alex said that he's wrong, but. So we should ask him. So I think what they have, so they say that so in the presence of some additional brain like this, you need to include the moduli of this brain, and this comes in as minus log p plus t bar minus k phi bar, where phi bar you can think of as the modulus of this brain. So imagine this has gone all the way down to the end of the throat, and this distance is some modulus. So this comes in like this. I mean, this is a generic form in which matter contributions come into this into the Taylor potential, and this goes back to what was written in the context of the hadronic spring. The W is still the old W. So again, we take this form, constant plus this, and you can compute the F potential, and this is 1/6. So let me call this guy two times R. And in fact, it is this guy which is e to the 4u now in this context. It's previously, remember, this was t, the real part of t, but it's now the real part of r, which is, this argument. The argument of the log itself is what should be identified as e to the 4u, where e to the u is this factor which comes in the metric. They say, well, okay, so now you compute the potential from this and you find a structure like this, 1/6 r times d rho dt w squared times 1 plus 1/2 r times k phi k phi bar over k phi phi bar minus 3 over 2 r w bar dt w plus w dt bar w bar. Plus this d term, this d bar term, which looks like this. R squared like this. First thing they do is to change this square to a cubed. I'm sorry. This was cubed, remember. Where was it?
I think it was probably on either behind the board you're writing on or.
Yeah. This was cubed, right? This is what I would get naively from analyzing the tension of the debug ring and putting in the metric factors. They claim that it becomes a square because a word of an argument which I do not understand at all, but I will quote. So we know from GKP, I didn't have time to go through this, but this working business was that this e to the 4 minimum gives you. So the minimum value of the walk factor is related to this minimum value of r by some, okay, this is the formula I was looking for before. This is 8 pi k over 2 gs times m, where k and m are some integral fluxes. So you have to choose m1 much larger than k, and you will get some lot of, you will get a lot of warping. Now, of course, I mean, this relation is valid as a relation between two constants. In other words, this at the minimum and this at the minimum at some critical point of the potential. However, they seem to be saying that. And also, remember, this is a function of x. This is a function of y. So you can't have this equality as a functional equality. Only way you can have it is the constants. But nevertheless, they say, this is valid as they write a relation like this. I'm sorry. I use their notation and I use a there. So then this a, my a min is Sorry, the min is what I have been calling omega all this time. So this is the work factor. Okay. Sorry, I have been using omega all this time. So they claim they say that there is some factor of R which is missing some. So there is a e to the minus 4a in the tension formula, which, well, I don't remember whether I went through that or not, but if you look at the tension formula, if you look at the root g and put in all these metric factors, you have some e to the 4a factor there, or minus 4a. And this is a factor of R. So they write a formula like this, which does not make sense to me, but so there is this factor e to the minus 4a here, so that makes, e to the plus 4a here, so that makes the 3 1 over 2r cubed into 1 over 2r squared. I don't think this is relevant or that it's necessary for their argument, but they do this. And I think the best argument, as I said, is Alex's argument, which really starts from 10 dimensions. But since we've been looking at the 4-dimensional effective potentials, let me just finish this argument here. So then they say, well, now we need to go to the canonically. Okay, so that's your potential. The canonically normalized field is not that curly phi, but a straight phi, which is think of phi, which is related to this curly phi by phi over 3 t plus c bar. And that's because you see the Kähler potential is k of t plus c bar. So the Kähler metric would be a 1 over t plus c bar squared. And so that's going to appear in front of the kinetic term. So if I divide by this, then I get some, or multiply by this, I get the canonically normalized field. And if I, and then the potential can be written, yes, in the following form. So they say, let's write this as, so this squared rho, and let's take rho to be t. I've been using t all the time, so let me stick with my notation. Let's take t to be real and compute this potential, and they find w prime squared t minus 3 w of t w prime of t plus d over 4 times t minus phi bar over 2 squared. So this tells a minimum at t equals some tc, let's say. Phi equal to 0. And now if I expand around this minimum, I want to look at the phi potential around this minimum, and I get something like this. I get V0, so this is the potential at the minimum, times, this should be a minus 2 here. So this is in the denominator, t minus 5 phi bar in the denominator. Then I have I have confused my my normalized fields, I think. This is the canonical normalized field. And this was the original field. And in terms of the canonical, this is what I had before. In terms of the canonical normalized field, this is, this looks like this, 1 minus. So I take out two factors of t, right? And that gives me 1 minus phi bar over 3 squared, which is approximately V0 of 0 critical to 1 plus 2 thirds phi bar. So eta is 2 thirds. Plus corrections, plus more corrections, you expect. And the interesting point is that, and at the end of the day, this means that this doesn't depend on having this uplift term at all, but this is really a property of the ADS vacuum that you were looking at. That is before uplifting. Okay. Maybe I should keep that and go here. So I have some ADS throat, approximately ADS throat, and that should be dual to there is this throat, which is some. This is approximately ADS 5. This should be dual to some approximately field theory which is close to being conformal. And so the scalar field should be conformally coupled. And this mass here, which is I have M phi squared, which is 2 thirds times VDS, the potential at the minimum, if D is 0, then the R ADS is, how is this? There's some conformal coupling, which is 1/6 radius times phi bar in the dual theory, and that's what you are seeing here. These numbers are, and so this would be the size of the ADS minimum. That's the ADS minimum I had before I uplifted. Okay, so the dual theory should have some coupling, R phi squared coupling, and that they say is a generic feature of motion down this throat, and therefore eta is of this order. As I said, I mean, there is this, I mean, you can argue this starting from the 10-dimensional theory without going through any of the supergravity analysis. You just look at the potential of a deep bend going down the throat, and this is what Alex has done, and you can produce this plus more correction. As I said, that doesn't stop people from looking at the equation. As I said, the Henry claims that, well, I mean, by the way, I mean, this doesn't mean that you cannot get reflection. You can, but it means that generically you do not. I mean, you can dream up more complicated situations, and I think they have an appendix where they make things more complicated. But they are, you know, they are fine-tuned situations, and we always knew this is a reflection, of course, in the supergravity context, this is a reflection of our problem, that you can't get an inflation generically without fine-tuning. But you can fine-tune.
I mean, in their paper, they also say I can fine-tune parameters in this low energy effective action to get away from two-thirds. But
yes.
Do you have an understanding of what that means in the higher dimensional picture where you have this?
No. What that means in the higher dimensional picture? No, it's not clear what it means in the high dimensional picture. I think the fine tuning, I mean, for instance, you can do fine tuning even in, so another way of getting inflation would be to take T to be the inflation, right? By introduce DD bar branch, right? Mm-hmm. And then so you want to then construct some potential which looks like this, right? Something like that, and say inflation with some sufficiently flat maximum here. Okay, this is the potential for T, or a saddle point or something. And this can be done if you can fine tune. If you have, for instance, a racetrack type model, and there was a paper by Cliff and Fernando and Linda and Carlos, there were eight authors on the paper. Which had I think it was called racetrack inflation. So this would be the simplest way of getting an inflaton potential. But you have to start close to some saddle point in the potential, and then you can fine tune that saddle point to be such that it is smaller. And you can do the same thing with DD bar, but this is simpler. If you're fine tuning, then.
Yeah, I was more interested sort of, I have a low energy picture that gives me an answer, and I have this geometric picture that gives me an answer.
Yes.
But somehow,
You mean the geometric picture means the motion down the throat?
In particular giving me two-thirds.
Yes.
But somehow I'm allowed to, there's extra parameters or extra grains I can play.
Yeah, because the original picture, right.
I don't understand, somehow that ought to have a manifestation in the geometric.
Well, it's like asking, well, for instance, already in this low energy picture, there are aspects which do not really have a string theory picture, where, I mean, do not have a string theory explanation, like this Gegener condensation, the number derivative potential. So in that case, of course, there is. Okay, in that case, you might say you have the D-instanton argument of variance. So they give you only very particular types of, e to the minus 2 pi t. That's what you get, and multiples of 2 pi t if you have multiple instantons. Whereas Gegener condensation gives you something, something more complicated involving the gauge group. The index of the gauge group and so on. I don't have a string picture.
But optics in the four-dimensional theory should be capturable by the
high dimensional. Yeah, absolutely. I agree.
I didn't understand those. Are you saying that this is an open question, or are you saying?
Yes. I would say it's an open question.
Like play at low energy.
They are playing games at low energy.
Right, but is it that those are suspect, that perhaps I shouldn't believe them, or that's just one has to work harder to understand it from a 10-dimensional point of view?
That's a friend of mine.
You can turn off the mic.
Okay. Well, I mean, the short answer to that is I don't know. I mean, perhaps there is some ten-dimensional, there is some string theory picture which gives you this.
What do you do to fine-tune this away? What do you add?
Frankly, I haven't been interested enough in this picture to understand what exactly you're fine tuning, but they add some
stuff which, well, I can look at the paper here again.